bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Gentlemen, I thought we might give some little updates on all of our respective projects. Brian, I would love to get a little update. How has the compound been working out?
Well, the good news is we've bought more infrastructure in anticipation of our big Founders Day picnic. Oh, dear God.
Thankfully, it wasn't like a bunch of perishables. It's stuff that we can use.
Oh, correct. Yeah. They were known upgrades that we knew we needed, like a PA system, because if we're going to do a live show, you're going to want a PA system with proper monitors and all that stuff.
We got a snake that I think we'll be setting up probably tomorrow during the day, because we have some music for Night Attack tomorrow.
Oh, right on. Yeah, that's right. And
wait, a what?
It's called a snake. Basically, it's like 16 XLR cords all taped together, so they all can. You can have hookups on stage instead of here at the board.
And then, okay, and then we're not a walking OSHA disaster at all times. Only part of the time. We bit the big bullet on putting in a proper AC system for the soundstage just in time, you know, because we needed it to keep it cool during this hot summer months if we're going to do a live show. And also all of those shoots that we're going to do in the live. That's right. because everybody's sheltering in place right now. But we also installed, we got electricity, sort of an electricity island between the soundstage and the main house, that we were able to put both a Z-Wave connector and a Eero Wi-Fi extender. So now inside the soundstage, which is a good 150, 200 yards away, you think that's about right? That might be a bit much.
I'm no good at distances.
Probably 150 yards away, but the whole front 2 acreage, you're able to get 60 megabits down everywhere now.
Nice.
So bit of a bummer that all of that had to get expended just, you know, for this event, and then the event is postponed, but at least we have that thing. Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, it's a bit of a ghost town around here. There's pretty much just 3 of us who kind of come and go, and occasionally are all in the same place at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it looks amazing. Every time I see photos of that, I'm just really impressed by what we'll put together and just how this is, you know, and wait, I mean, not to say that in my head it was just going to be like, you know, you in like some dirty shack next to a lawnmower with a microphone. maybe more closer to that expectation. What you built looks great. I see the interiors of your thing, and I see like the interiors of where out in Texas where SpaceX is building the rockets. I'm like, man, these look like similar facilities.
It is coming along. It's just it's just a slow grind. And I suppose that's the one lesson. On the one hand, it just seems like nothing gets done and everything's moving at a snail's pace. But then you look back and just 1 year ago, there was no building. There was no ability for us to work out of this. I mean, it's if you look at it on the geologic era scale, a lot is happening very quickly.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, wait. Justin, so what's been going on in politics and your politics?
Is there anything in politics right now?
Raise the dead. Can we get an update on that?
Yeah, it's you know, we're kind of playing it by ear with Raise the Dead, because there were elements that you know, I was going to kind of parlay into a season 2 based on the you know, the events of this season. I don't know right now exactly where we're going to be able to compare stuff. So I've kind of taken a little bit of a wait and see approach with Raise the Dead. Of course, the ebook's available. The audiobook is now available. And the audiobook has a bonus episode that was not included in the podcast feed. So yeah, you know, it's out there. My kind of like a quarantine strategy is I was thinking about re-recording, and I still might do a mini episode that might be one or two episodes about this one thing that definitely did happen that I can compare to the 1964 election. But for right now, I just kind of wanted to keep my editing sharp. And so I've been doing this very stupid podcast weekly about Billy Crystal movies in the 90s called Crystal. And the method to my madness there, aside it being a sure sign of my worsening mental health, is that I just wanted to edit. I wanted to edit in the same style that I edit Raise the Dead. I wanted to research in the same style as Raise the Dead, but I didn't want to do something that might make people think that Raise the Dead is something other than, you know, what it is, which is fairly highly researched, fairly polished. I wanted to just kind of continue to work that out. So now, on the Jury podcast feed, if you subscribe to Jury or Jury Daily, it's on the same feed. You can get it right now. Is Crystal, which is just me watching Billy Crystal movies from 1989 to 2001. And it's one part Plague Diary, one part Billy Crystal review show, and one part history lesson of something else worldwide that happened in a horrifying manner in the same year that these delightful Billy Crystal movies got released. So to remind us that, you know, that there, even then, there were people that were in crisis and didn't know which way the world was moving, left or right. But hell, did they get to watch City Slickers.
Hey, so on that subject of mental health and projects to preserve one's mental health, I was talking last night with Andrew Heaton, who made the self-discovery that as an extreme extrovert, he needs to not just talk to people, but see their faces and feel dialed in on a conversation. So he's made the habit of, he and I have pretty much daily been FaceTiming here and again. And I was telling him about my pick from the Weird Things podcast, Half-Life Alyx, and we were talking about VR in general, and I suggested to him, even though it's a very major expense, he is trapped in a one-bedroom apartment, and all he wants to do is be outside and visiting and talking with people, and I suggested that even though it is an expensive investment, I think that for his mental health, he would very much benefit from, you know, a Vive room scale VR experience. So because, you know, there's chat rooms and there's that subjective feeling of being outdoors and feeling like you're not restricted and you could go anywhere. I don't know. It seems like a responsible thing to spend money on right now, but maybe that's me just being a fanboy telling other people to get on the train.
On a similar take, one of the other social communities I'm in outside of the Diamond Club is starting to do like happy hour, like Zoom meetings, like getting on a big just like video call. I think the first one we did was on Wednesday, and there was like 30 people or so, which was just, it was a lot, but it was fun to talk to everybody, and you know, a couple hours you know, once or twice a week, and just that little bit, just like and not just like being on the meeting, but like kind of like having like everyone like stopping and just being able to like, you know, focus on this. Like I went and bought liquor, which I had not had a drink for a little while, just because I'd never had any reason to go or ability to go out lately. And so just like having that moment to kind of replicate talking to people, is good, you know, Discord or Zoom, Skype.
It is kind of funny in that whole like beer versus liquor thing where it's like socially, you'll find yourself sooner or later in a restaurant or a bar and you could have a drink or a couple. Right. But then you cross over that boundary. It's like, there's only one place to get the hard stuff. And it's this place. we're a necessary utility here.
Still closed on Sundays though.
Yeah.
Weird. Interesting. But yeah, you know, like, you know, you don't have to go out and buy $2,000 worth of VR equipment and computers and all, but even just like little stuff like that. Or this was a thing I saw on Twitter. It's like, text your parents, text your friends. Like, if you're like, I don't like texting very much, but I know I'm bored and I know all my friends are bored, and it's good to text them and make sure that they're not, you know, stir crazy.
Yeah, two things. One is, if, like I've mentioned before, if you don't want to go all in on a VR rig, the Oculus Quest is great. You're not going to play, you know, Half-Life Alyx on that. It's just can't. It's not designed for that. You could cable it to your, if you have a PC gaming thing, you can do it, but it's still, that part's beta and stuff. But for a lot of other things, a lot of the great VR and a lot of the social VR stuff, you can use the Oculus Quest or even the Go. The Oculus Go, you can get for $150, and you can participate in like some of the Facebook events and things like that with it, which is, you know, they do live concerts and stuff inside of there. The Go, like I said, it's $150. It doesn't give you the full 6 degrees of freedom, but you're in a different environment. And I've had a lot of fun just playing with the Go, and, you know, even though I have better gear. Man, it's like, I know I'm wired differently, because I'm like, oh, I don't have to go anywhere. I just get to stay in and work on stuff and work on my projects. And I'm like, I think, and that's to my detriment perhaps, but I just,
you don't feel like you don't feel like just the fact that you shouldn't go out changes things. Like my day-to-day hasn't changed too much, but just the fact that I know I shouldn't go out.
I still go for walks. I put on gloves. I make sure, like, you know, I don't touch anything, and I bring gloves and a mask in case if a crowd of joggers were to come towards me, whatever. Mm. I still go for walks and stuff, but I've always been such a hermit that it's just, you know, the only thing I thought that I go, man, I really miss this Korean barbecue. <You know?
laughs> Let me put it this way. When I used to work with Andrew in Florida, there were times, most days we would go to lunch, right? But then there would sometimes be stretches, and it would be while Andrew was in the middle of a project or he had some deadline or something that had to happen. And it might be a couple days, right? And then fold that in over a weekend, that I just knew that when I got that call on Tuesday, this was a very important Arby's trip. Like, you know, because there was a totally starved Andrew who had just kind of lost to the ether the fact that 5 days had passed, because it was all in focus, and this was a moment where I wanted to be there for my friend. So I can totally understand where, especially now that Andrew has somebody else in the house, like, you know, like, oh, I mean, that's like 90% of why you'd leave in the first place.
And not a prisoner, by the way. She's not a free to leave. She's not a prisoner. But like, yeah, once I get on focused on something, like I've talked about this before, like I cannot multitask at all. I have to have 100% of my attention on a thing. And once I do, though, once I get in, I think flow is something I think comes to me pretty easily. And once it's there, like I built a thing, I don't know, was it talking to somebody Monday or Tuesday? I'm like, man, you know, I'm walking around and there are all these, you know, restaurants that are open with signs up, but nobody gets to see the restaurants because the signs, because they're all inside. Wouldn't it be neat if you could just print out a thing to put on your refrigerator that says, hey, here's a list of places I like to go to. I'm like, yeah, that'd be cool. I'm like, well, I guess I could make a web app for that. And then it's like 24 hours later, I'd had takeout.page, you know, because I was like, and that was just me just hyper-focused on trying to create something. And so that's the advantage of it. The disadvantage is I, you know, tend to lose track of time, and I'm like, holy crap, all of a sudden, you know, a week has gone by. You know, I built a thing, I made a thing, but I haven't talked to anybody. And, you know, I'm going to be the person they find alone in an apartment that paid it up for several years. And nobody realized that,
you know, one of those stories of the old lady who prepaid for many, many years.
Yeah, it's finding me away at my computer writing something, you know, and the screen's still flickering.
That's funny. I definitely live a bit of a goldfish existence where I wake up and I'm so happy to see the family and the kids, and maybe I'll just get a little bit of email done and oh more family, more kids, huh? And then that hits a tipping point around 11:30 when I'm like, I need to go to the other place. And then I go to the other place and then work until finally it's like, oh man, it'd be great to see family and kids and watch Battlestar Galactica. It's astonishing, this kind of ping pong existence. And I guess back to the subject of liquor stores, we did that one episode on how to make homemade hand sanitizer using Everclear 190 proof. And I went by to see if they had Everclear, because once hand sanitizer became the new gold standard, I was like, oh, well, let me get some more. And the dude was like, no, we got cleaned out. And then a few days later, I checked in and he was like, oh, I did get some. And he's checking me out with the Everclear. And then this moment, like this wave comes over him and he looks at me with genuine concern and says, you're not going to drink that, are you? And I was like, oh, Christ, no.
Yeah, I just want to do like a little aside to like, if you're a journalist and you're not listening to this, but if you were hypothetically and you're doing your list of helpful things and advice, telling people like, don't make your own hand sanitizer. Like I see a lot of those things like, oh, you're better off not making your own. Like we have this alternative, like we're going, man, I could just go to CVS and pick up a carton full of this stuff, but no, I'm going to go buy a much more expensive thing and make my own. You know, those things that sort of drive me nuts is like this sort of intent to sort of help, but not understanding the situation we're in. We're like, there aren't alternatives in cases, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
you know, there is a thing that's kind of being exposed now that information actually matters. And that is the fact that for a lot of different reasons, journalism, the way that we understand it, has kind of become somebody says a thing, 50,000 other people all compete to see the best the most engageable headline that they can write on that thing, whether or not that thing is good or bad. But it's like what then the market then becomes like if the thing is, hey, you can't use regular household liquors, for example. Like Tito's vodka was saying, hey, we do not use us for hand sanitizer. We do not have enough power to do that in our proof. That now becomes the most provocative way that you can say it takes more than just stuff you have lying around to make hand sanitizer is don't make hand sanitizer, as opposed to, hey, you would, you know, it would take, you know, money and probably products you don't have, but, you know, I guess we're just sitting around.
And on top of that, there's that weird compulsion everybody has in the comments to just bark out and parrot whatever the thing is on that subject that they've seen before, that they speak with complete authority because they watched some other YouTuber's video who had a different opinion, and because they watched that first, they all know for a fact that you must be wrong. Like, it's very clear nobody has hands-on experience with any of that. And also, everybody assumes, like, for example, one of the earliest episodes of The Modern Rogue we did was how to make a homemade gas mask, you know, for the purposes of withstanding tear gas or whatever. And we made it. We used the activated charcoal. We did it, all that stuff. And comments are still coming in where people are like, you're better off just buying one, TBH. It's crap, Sherlock.
Well, you know, like, there's also just like a lot of misinformation going out there. You know, the two big things I've seen a lot are, hey, look at these photos of Venice. The water is clear and the animals are back. And they're not photos of Venice. They're photos of a similar waterlogged city that always has clean water and always has animals anyway. Mm. And then the thing that was going around, which is don't take ibuprofen because all of these people who died had taken ibuprofen. This very common drug.
don't hydrate yourself. All these people who died were
trying
to hydrate
themselves. They're 80% water.
Well, let's get in the ibuprofen thing, because that was a thing where there was an advisory from, I think, like the French health officials or something about ibuprofen. They had issued an advisory and they're like, oh, okay, and then maybe we should avoid it. And that went over. So there was an official advisory. Now there's more data. And they're like, no, that doesn't seem to be the case. If you need to take ibuprofen, take it. And that's one of the problems where it's even responsible people. Now we were getting a mask is not going to help you. That's not true. You know, if somebody is spitting phlegm in front of your face, whatever, a mask is really helpful for reducing the particle. Now, we get the difference of filters and how viruses can fit through smaller things, but some of the particles we're trying to avoid are bigger and whatever, and it also keeps you from touching your face. And that was one of the frustrating things, because you find out that some health officials are worried about, like, well, we don't want a mask shortage.
Well, and
yeah,
even from
lie to people.
And even from a behavioral standpoint, I noticed when I went to the grocery store that I would give a wider berth to anybody who was wearing a mask, because it was an objective outward signal that I am very concerned and I would appreciate, you know, you helping me out in that. And it was an unconscious thing for me to do.
Yeah, and it's one of things, like, they've done studies, and again, check everything we say. Like, yeah, don't go, well, those guys said it. Vet everything, multiple sources, look for things that are coming from responsible organizations, whatever. But I saw a study on the internet, so it must be true, but it showed that, like, even masks that are not N95 still are better than nothing. They show like how they were able to reduce the amount of stuff impact because you do have a barrier between your face. Some things are caught and it was able to reduce the viral load. And the problem is people go like, well, no, the virus is too small. It'll fit right through. Like, yes, if we're looking at it on that level, that on that micro level, that is absolutely true. But on a macro level, will it reduce the amount of stuff that gets into your lungs, whatever? And the answer is, well, of course, absolutely it will, and prevent these other things. So you get that sort of when we talk to a virologist who pointed out that this, like, yes, that part is true. But going back, will it reduce? Well, yes. And it's like, that's the thing that frustrates me most is health officials who should know better, who are giving us sort of conflicting information. And
that's, you know, we are in a situation right now where you talk about the fog of war, right? That you know, the fog of war is in the middle of all the craziness. You often, it becomes harder and harder to see the forest from the trees. And we actually kind of create our own little version of that on social media. Like there is no clearing of the radio lines. We are all still interacting at all times. And not to say that we shouldn't, I think we should, but also you just got to be clear that like, there's a lot of stuff that I read either from foreign sources for which you can use all the same rubrics of like, and we know it on this show better than anything, that when you read foreign stories, very often, especially the ones that kind of confirm a thing that's happening domestically or seem kind of too good to be true, almost universally they're not exactly the way that you think that they that you're interpreting they are. And now we're just in a crisis. We're in a literal crisis where everybody is trying to look out for their, I do believe empathetically, they are trying to look out for what they believe is the best case scenario. But man, now's the time. If you don't take like Googling things seriously, like now's the time to take the after things Google it challenge and just, whenever you read some of this stuff, just take a closer gander, especially if it seems important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, should have been sort of our protocol to begin with, because, and I have people who I know I think are smart who have sent me stuff and I'm like, there's no original source to this. You didn't look this up. You just forwarded this thing to somebody. I'm like, you know, you can go to the CDC website to see if this came from here. You know, you can go to this other place to find out the original source on this. And the danger that comes from people, like I've had friends of friends forward me like absolutely idiotic things that like would get people killed, you know, if they took that seriously and put themselves in a dangerous situation. Like, oh, well, this is the thing. And it's credible. Like, how do you, well, because it says it's from this person. Like, yeah, somebody literally wrote the name of an organization in there and forward you a thing. This is pure text. It's like, basic comprehension skills elude even smart people.
Man, that would be the generator, right? Like my Mad Lib style, a family, like you know, profession, right? Or family member or friend is close with important job at important research facility and they have the following advisory, and then just pick some other just grab bag words and throw that together, grab bag symptoms, throw that together, hit send to entire address book.
Yeah, and don't look back like a cool guy walking away from an explosion.
Yep.
We all, and I know particularly myself, I need to be more cognizant of the thing that is the retrograde, like, look at all the stupid things these people said or whatever. And it's fine. It's sort of a thing to say, how credible should I treat them now about things, to be sure. But there is that the second guessing game, when we need to be kind of in the, what do we need to do now game more? We need to be paying more attention to like, what do we know now? What do we know now? And that's a thing that's evolved, is things that were hazy and uncertain, but maybe we're going to go one way. Now we've gotten a tremendous amount of clarity. Like, we see where things are going now. And now it's more critical, I think, to say, you know, be in the moment and thinking forward.
You know, I've tried to ride that line with PX3 because obviously this is a hotbed for politics. Politicians are leaders in these crisis moments, and now we need them to be the best leaders they can be. And I have said on the show, and I've had to practice what I preach, that I think that they're there are some questions that need to be answered about how these, you know, how the run up to this happened, and for officials federally on the state level and on the more local level and some of the hotspots, there are some real questions that need to be answered. But I hope to live, and I hope everybody in those areas lives long enough so we can start asking those questions. Because for right now, I think there is a necessity. The one thing I don't want to do in political commentary is to make somebody who's listening to me distrust official sources now. Like, mm-hmm. because not, I think that they are doing the best job or the worst job. They are doing, at the very least, a job that needs to be taken in as part of a balanced breakfast of information. And I don't want to sow that kind of discord in whatever small way that I can. I don't have the biggest podcast on the planet, but if I think that we're at a point now where, look, it doesn't have to last forever. Could be a month, 2 months, but make sure you're paying attention to the official stuff that is coming out. Then do with that as you will.
There was an article that, to be honest, was a bit terrifying. The idea that the virus itself and the reactions of social distancing was becoming increasingly politicized. Somebody talked about how he went to the local golf club and, the Democrats were all practicing social distancing and, you know, red hats were all shaking hands and loudly talking about this hoax. And it's like, ooh, I don't care for that. Let's not politicize this, please.
Yeah, that was a problem. I saw an article about that, and I would say you could pull up data that shows that the opposite's been the cases where you look at work, it's affected and stuff, and there's no help in that. And you could certainly say that, well, people who are from more rural environments might have this, whatever, and that's a dangerous thing because we want to pick a side and blame and go, look what these people are doing in that, and it's like, man, the virus does not know your political affiliations. And you look at some of the first people to get struck down by this were wealthy people who traveled a lot, whatever, who probably fit into one other demographic. But then, you know, your health worker or somebody who's got to work as an orderly in a hospital doesn't care what your political affiliation is. It's going to affect you the same. A lot of our first responders. And so it gets into this sort of like, it's frustrating to see that. And I would say, too, like, if you're looking, one of the problems, the era we live in, which now, too, is that the idea of declaring yourself a fact checker is a really good way to assert your own opinions on stuff, on things. And you see stuff, well, this fact check says this. And it's like, who fact checks the fact checks? And Snopes is often a good site, but that Snopes is I don't trust them when they're going to interpret something for me when they can just put it in front of me. And that's been my thing where it's been frustrating is that, some of us good, but when they're going to interpret what this person said, well, this meant this, whatever. It's like, yeah, just show me what they said and let us come to our own opinions. That idea that we have to tell you if this is true or false can be problematic when it's more subjective things, but it can be very useful they're wonderful when it like, did the CDC issue this statement? Was this email coming from there? Whatever. That's a great source for that. But interpretation. So any picks?
I had one, but I have temporarily forgotten it. I don't think I've mentioned it last week, but we're going back and I got the kids watching Battlestar Galactica, and it's not only one of the greatest science fiction shows of all time, especially it's one of the greatest first seasons of anything of all time, but it's especially delightful to realize that Battlestar Galactica, as a meditation on what a post 9/11 world looked like, is fascinating because it manages to cast the humans in both roles. In the first season, the humans are after a Pearl Harbor type, you know, disaster that destroys everyone. You know, they got 9/11 and now there's only 50,000 people left and they're on the run and they're hunting from within their own ranks for Cylons because they look like us now. You know, it's a very easy metaphor to think back to what it was like with some of the anti-Islamic reactionary attitudes in a post 9/11 world within America. But then later there is in later seasons, there's a time when humans are trying to hide in New Caprica and the Cylons come in with this, you know, this giant grandiose plan. Like, no, we know what's best for you. We're going to take care of you. We're going to occupy this area, and then you find yourself, now the humans are cast in the role of citizens who, you know, in the thinly veiled allegory to the Iraq War or Afghanistan, you know, you're suddenly rooting for humans as they commit suicide bombings in there. It's with a little bit of distance between now and those events, it becomes a lot more interesting to see how we dealt with those times in fiction, especially extremely well-crafted science fiction. So I enjoyed it quite a bit.
It is a wonderful show, and it's interesting to see that it's one of those things that came out and changed the trajectory of other science fiction. You know,
it elevated the game for everyone.
Yeah, you can't watch Last Jedi and not realize how much that show probably influenced Johnson's, you know, thinking on that. And Ronald D. Moore, you know, got brought in to help work on a lot of other sci-fi stuff and whatnot, because it was just, just showed how good it could be.
Hey, I got a pick. If you're a psychopath like I am and want to watch raw data come in about this plague, you can go to worldometers, world letter O meters.info/coronavirus. It's just raw data. It's something that I've watched a lot, specifically if you're trying to, you know, anchor yourself against a lot of the interpretations of stuff that's going on. It's helpful to just kind of see what the numbers are. And for those of you who are listening to the PX3 shows where I'm doing the hyperbole-free coronavirus update, this and the New York Times has a single always updating page of places that are in shelter at home orders. But that's where I've been getting sourcing all the numbers for stuff like that.
And can we just take a moment to talk to the thing about numbers? And I think for many of our people, we don't have to remind you, but when it comes to like country by country and even region by region, everybody is self-reporting, and the ways these data is accumulated varies. And sometimes the way they count cases can be different. You know, we predicted on the show 2 weeks ago or so, once testing increased and we were going to find about all these new cases, there would be this sort of panic. And predictably that happened once we ramped up to like 100,000 tests per day in the United States. People are like, oh my God, look at all these cases. It's like, yes, when you test more people, you get more positive results, but still that logical sort of thing kind of eluded people. And there's a lot of data. So I'd just be kind of mindful, like, understand that, like, that you're only, the data doesn't tell you the real picture. The data tells you what we're able to find out. It's only where we're able to look. And we've seen, you know, the comparisons of the cases and stuff. I don't know anybody credible who believes anything coming out of China right now, when China has actively shut down reporters and anybody trying to report on this.
there was an article that said, seems like they are ordering more urns than they have reported deaths. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm a China skeptic, let me clear. But you have to be skeptical of that stuff too, because there might be, I don't know what the daily number was, and did they shut down another mortuary there, and that was why all the cases went to this other one. There was the story that like 20 million cell phones appeared to vanish from the cell phone networks over there. And I read that, I'm like, maybe, like that would be in line with the idea. I mean, that's a lot, but it's China. It's China, and they've lied about, you know, a lot of things, because that's a totalitarian government. Any government does that can get away with it will do. If our government could completely control the press like China did, they would do that. And so I just watch the data, but be mindful, because I hear people say like, oh my God, look what's going on in the US. Like, yeah, it's bad here. But look at the mortality rates here, and then look at other countries, and you realize like, oh, you know, we need to test more, and they're really not testing enough, because either this is, their hospital care is so horrible in these other countries, people are dying at a higher rate, or it preys upon people's sort of genotypes, or there's just a lot more cases than we realize in those other places too. So I just, data is great, but you got to put those asterisks by it.
Just be aware. This kind of thing is, there's no perfect way. There's no God mode that you can just exit out to the menu and see server-wide stats, right? Like all of this is fallible. The only thing that I have found any kind of peace in is just tracking you know, deaths are not a perfect statistic, as Andrew said. But at the very least, you know, somebody died, right? And it wasn't a percentage of how many cases are, you know, being found versus the testing. Like, I don't know. I have found it helpful for me.
Oh, no, I look at this stuff all the time. And I'm not saying, I'm just being mindful. And I the thing that frustrates me is journalists, I've seen some gotcha sort of things about like, so-and-so said this, but that's false because this data said it here. And it's like, yeah, read the asterisk. That data takes 24 hours to be put into there. So-and-so said this based upon data that they're getting 24 hours before it goes into there. And that's a thing that frustrates me is this sort of like, we're going to use it for gotcha and whatever. And it's like, the map is not the territory. You know, we're trying to get a grasp of what's going on. We're trying to understand what this is. And yes, it is. It can be a thing to kind of get you, this is sort of what we think we know, but just put those asterisks by it.
Yeah. I got a pick. I have a presumptive pick because I kept seeing that this was out and then kept not making the time to watch it. But Ozark season 3 is out on Netflix now.
Ooh, I'm playing catch up on season 2 last night.
Season 2 is good.
It's all right. I don't feel the same stakes in season 2 that I did on season 1. Like season 1 had that delightful, oh, this guy's screwed the entire way. But he's starting to act a little bit more like an impenetrable superhero. And at least, you know, 3 episodes in or whatever. It's like I'm not afraid of the main cast getting killed anymore, which is sort of reducing my tension, but I am excited to get caught up on season 3.
Yeah, season 3, at least the trailers for it look very action packed. They've got a thing happened and now they get to do stuff about the thing, and so that seems very ripe for crime and illegal crime. So, Ozark, that's on Netflix. Season 3 just came out.
Sweet.
Cool.
I guess my pick is, I mentioned this in the other podcast, is the book The Wisdom of Crowds by Russell Sirwicki. I think it's James Sirwicki, sorry. Really good book. Just a really good thing. And I think, man, and I would try to think of one that would be a good one about looking, understanding data and probabilities too, because that is my frustration as journalists and people like this who just quite don't grasp a thing, or they'll get a thing and they'll say like, well, here's the thing about this thing. You really got to give out this figure. Yes. And then they'll say, and also this, like, yeah, but you didn't adjust for that thing too, because you're trying to score political points or whatever, or downplay or upplay or whatever. And I'm getting bad information from all sides. Let me make that very clear. And people who are trying to score political scores by taking a thing and saying, look at it this way, but don't look at it this way. So that doesn't go too much into it, but it still is a really good book about like how you try to arrive at the right answers to things.
There you go. The Wisdom of Crowds.
Yep. Gentlemen, it's an after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.